Tomorrow night, 7:45 at the Hawth Theatre in Crawley, Julie Felix in concert. I quote from the Hawth publicity, "An international artist of great distinction, throughout her career Julie has passionately embraced the cause of peace, singing songs of protest at rallies and inspiring audiences young and old around the world. Julie, it's an absolute delight to have you here in the studio at Suzy Radio this afternoon."
It's great to be here, David. Thank you.
Welcome to you. And we've got about 10 minutes now to chat. We'll finish up with the show, but 7:45 tomorrow night, full house?
I hope so.
I certainly hope so for you. That's right. And let's go right back to your early days in this country. And a major career step came for you when you became the resident singer on the Frost Report. Tell us about working with David Frost when he was a young man.
He was very kind and very, on reflection, I can see how he helped so many of us. And just to jump ahead here, I had such a shock when we lost him last summer. He had just recorded an introduction to my birthday concert, and I saw him about 2 weeks before, and it was just so... He really helped mold my career, you know, and at the time, as I was explaining, you know, I could go into the whole story of how I met him and all that, which is quite interesting in itself. But the fact that he took a chance on someone unknown and put me on there with other people that were unknown as well. And before the show, I would always warm up the audience. And that's what eventually led to me doing my own series. But I was just explaining to people that in those days there were only two channels. There was BBC One and ITV. So if somebody was watching television on a Thursday night, they'd see you. You know, so that was an extraordinary door opening for me in my bumpy but wonderful career.
And of course we had programs of wonderful quality as a result, and because everybody saw them, they were so much discussed. Tell us about working with the young Ronnie Barker and the young Ronnie Corbett.
Oh, they were wonderful. They were really lovely. I mean, I still love, Ronnie Barker's gone ahead, but they were such professionals. They were absolutely slick and professional, and of course it was a live show, David. It was absolutely live. So while I was sitting on the stool singing a song, there were all things moving around, and so they always took quite a close up of me, so they would have room to move everything around, and you'd hear a clang and a bang once in a while. But they were wonderful, and so was John Cleese. And it's interesting with John that. Ronnie Barker and Ronnie Corbett, they were always, you know, funny and making jokes. But John Cleese was very serious. He's a very serious person, and he was so funny on screen. But when he was speaking to David about what was going to be taken on and what wasn't, he ended up in tears once because he felt so strongly about something that should have been included and wasn't.
Mm-hmm. A complete perfectionist, I should imagine.
Yes.
And of course, he produced probably the perfect sitcom in Fawlty Towers.
I know.
In years to come. Now, a few years back, you did a BBC Four show to celebrate 40 years since Frost Over England, and I believe you sang Blowing in the Wind that night.
Yes.
Tell us what Bob Dylan means to you.
It's difficult to say. I mean, he's probably my greatest influence as far as music and as far as my poetic and political approach to music. I know he's not political as such anymore, and I've become more so. But we're both Geminis, and I think that is quite relevant. If you know the story of Gemini, there are two brothers. There's Castor and Pollux in the sky, and one falls to earth. The one is in heaven. So the one in heaven is always trying to get to the one on earth. Mm. And the one on earth is always trying to get to the one in heaven. So there's always this tension with Dylan. Like 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard. Very dark images as well as very light songs. Mm. And I think it's this contrast between light and dark that brings in the beautiful poetry that he... Uh, that he expresses.
I think the poetic quality of some of his early lyrics is overlooked sometimes in the modern day after all the other things that he's done and been involved with. But, yes, superb. Now, what about Pete Seeger, who died recently? He must have meant a lot to you as well.
Yes, I only met him once, but that meant a lot to me. I had a nice chat with him and I sang to him. And what Pete Seeger contributed to... to the music industry as a whole, but mainly to folk music, was that he gave validity to expressing political ideas and cultural ideas and social ideas through music. And he also opened the doors for so many of the Negro spirituals that were, you know, so important, like Follow the Drinking Gourd. And people like Bruce Springsteen and other, have honored him because he brought much more than people realize to the music world and especially to the folk world. And his father was a collector of music, so he had a wonderful opportunity to discover so many roots of music. But it was his dedication to really representing the underdog that was such a tremendous contribution.
And you went on to host your own television show in the late 60s. Any acts, any moments stand out from those TV shows?
Gosh, there were so many. We did for 3 years, I mean, and so many people. It's a pity that they wiped the tape of most of the shows because there were people like Josh White was on, John Lee Hooker. I mean, people that... Tim Buckley. Mm-hmm. And I got to sing with Tim Buckley. Wonderful, beautiful artist, writes beautiful songs. So that stood out. And of course, my duet with Leonard Cohen, who I met before and is still a friend, was very special to me.
You had Leonard Cohen on really before he was famous.
Yes. Now he's extraordinary. Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, just by chance, I hope we've got something very special for you now. Julie, that's you and Leonard Cohen live on television before he was famous. As I say, No Way to Say Goodbye, the song. Many memories of that evening?
Oh, yeah. It was interesting because he and I were rehearsing it with Stanley Dorfman, who was the producer of the program. And we just kept, because I knew Leonard from before, so we just wanted to work. And we kept going over and over the verses to just make sure they were all right. And Stanley thought that was as long as the song was, and it was like 20 minutes or something. And he said, I think we have to cut it a bit. And we said, no, we're just going over and over it. So that was...
Absolutely wonderful to hear that again. And that must have been the really early days of colour TV.
Yes, it was... It was quite interesting because it was the first series in color of any. There were like the magical mystery show that the Beatles did, and there were some outdoor golf things. But it was the first series that was in color. And I had one of the first 21 color sets. So that were out in the country. So even people like Mickey Most didn't have one. So every time there was something interesting in color, everybody would come and squash into my flat on the King's Road and watch color television. So that was I was very honored to be one of the 21 first ones.
It was a very long time before my family was in any position to afford a color TV. I'm sure it was many years after that. So here we are, a few years later. What do you think drives us, in your case, to carry on recording and performing, in my case, to be sitting here behind a microphone, when we probably thoroughly deserve to put our feet up or take some time to smell the roses?
Well, it's very interesting because, you know, I've learned over the years that music when you're being creative, you're kind of in touch with the creator. And it's so I find that I have a strong music, a strong spiritual connection to the other world, and when you're creating music, it's like a way of praying to me, and I feel like I'm kind of in touch with the source, especially when the audience is with me. It's a wonderful feeling. That it's kind of like when people are listening, but not everybody. But when everybody's listening, and you're it's like you're on a spaceship and you take off, and it's a wonderful feeling of being being in tune with the universe. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the main reason that I keep singing. I just love it. I think I've been very blessed. I can't read or write music. It's all done intuitively, you know. And my father helped me. He was a Mexican musician. So it's difficult, David, to really answer that question comprehensively. But I think the simple answer is music to me is like a type of prayer.
And I suppose the other thing as well is that with modern recording techniques, there is a new kind of technological immortality. In a sense, when we do move on from this life, we leave our music behind for the generations that come afterwards.
And that's so scary when you're in the studio. You know, when I'm singing in concert, I just let it fly. What's in the studio, you think, gosh, it's going to be there forever. Help. You know, if you make one little mistake, you say it's there forever. So it's kind of scary that, yeah. I don't know, you know, about having it go on historically, but for my grandchildren, it might be interesting.
Oh, you'll be there longer than that, I think. I was looking, actually, at some of the songs on the list from your Andover concert that finished your performances last year, and there's Dylan there, Masters of War, Hard Rain's Gonna Fall, and Leonard Cohen, the song that we've just heard. But I see that Dusty's song, Going Back, was in there.
Yes.
Does that mean a lot to you?
Oh, yeah, very much. Dusty was a very close friend of mine. And matter of fact, a woman's writing a book about Dusty, and she's been talking to me about, and a lot of other people that knew her. It's interesting when you played Martha and the Vandellas, because that was such an influence. Dusty brought a quality to music that was not known in England, and I think she's the greatest British female singer of all time, and I feel very honored to have known her.
And of course, when she went off to do Dusty in Memphis, she added another layer to her talents. Wonderful album.
Yeah.
And Universal Soldier was on that list at Andover last year.
Yeah, I was very lucky to. I think it was in 1964 that Elkin Allen did a show called Heart Song, and there was Buffy St. Marie. There was a colored singer, I can't remember her name. There was Marianne Faithfull and me. So four of us were together. And I've known Buffy since then. And she's often underrated, I think. You know, she's written so many beautiful songs. Mm-hmm. She wrote, "You're not a queen, I'm not a queen, I'm a woman, take my hand." You know that song?
Yes.
Beautiful song.
Indeed. And can we expect some of those that I've just read out tomorrow night at the Hawth?
Yeah, well, probably. I do the first half of what I sort of plan, and the second half I ask for requests, so it keeps me on my toes, because people ask for all sorts of songs over the years. Make one point. I know we're running out of time.
No, we're fine.
When I do sing songs like Hard Rain or Masters of War, it's not a nostalgia thing. It's because I think they're more important now than they've ever been. I think we're facing incredible challenges politically, socially, and I think it's a real blessing that we have these songs to address those issues.
I've been around long enough to realise that as soon as one evil disappears, something steps up to take its place, you know. I'm sure the songs have all got absolute relevance. Anything else to tell us about tomorrow night?
I just hope you come, and I'll and I do ask people to sing with me. So that's always fun, because I think the energy is lifted when everybody's singing. Yeah, I don't know what else to say, David.
Well, then let me say that the show is tomorrow night, Tuesday the 25th. It's 7:45 p.m. at the Hawth in Crawley. Tickets are £16.50, and the box office is 01-293-553-636. Now, you mentioned you're doing a special show later on this year.
Yes, on the 14th of June in Glastonbury at the Assembly Halls, I'm going to be my 50th anniversary in the music world. I made my first album in 1964, so it's been half a century, can you believe, since I first became a professional singer. I sang before that, you know, around here and there, but that was, so that's going to be on the 14th. So if anybody can get down there, I'll probably have some guests on with me, some surprise guest, so it should be an interesting evening.
We shall look forward to it very much. I know that my colleague Mike King is going to be there in the audience tomorrow night, so as to report for Susie Radio. Now, people who'd like to follow you up in more depth, Julie, what's your website?
Oh, it's www.juliefelix.com.
That's fine, and I'm sure as a result of this afternoon there'll be loads of people in North Sussex and East Surrey both coming to the concert and taking a good look at the website, where we can find out so much more about our wonderful guest this afternoon.
Thank you, Dave. I also mentioned that I am on the notorious Facebook as well.
Right you are. This is something that some of us here at Suzy Radio embrace and some of us don't, I'm afraid.
I have mixed feelings.
I need a social media secretary to sort things out for me on that front. Julie, when I was looking around this morning for the duet with Leonard Cohen, I found a comment on the web from someone called Miss Sweet Jane. I don't know who she is, where she is, where she was. But I picked this up this morning off the net. It says, Julie Felix simply never sold out and never sold short. A beautiful talent. I thought that wouldn't make a bad testimonial if you ever hang up your guitar.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Julie Felix, thank you so much for spreading some stardust in the Suzy Radio studio this afternoon.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.